Dave Franco.
Yes, sir.
Hello.
Hey, Joe.
How are you?
Good.
Happy Sunday. Welcome to Labors for Neighbors. It's a show about labors and work and jobs and how they manifest themselves, not just to our own good and benefit, but to our neighbors and to the community and to our frenemies and even those who don't like us. We're theoretically, weirdly trying to bless them. And that's a miracle. Where does that come from? The origin? Where do we see it manifesting itself? A thousand different ways. You and I were chatting about that earlier. And what the heck does that mean? Where do you, Dave Franco, you're in Southern California. You said the name of the town, didn't you?
Yep. It's called Encinitas.
Does that mean anything in Spanish?
Yeah, well, it's there is the Encinas bush, a tree of some sort, some kind of plant, and Encinitas means little version of that. There's a town called Encinas, California, which is in the valley above in Los Angeles, and we're over here in Encinitas. Little bush.
You live on a hill. You have a nice view. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Orange County. So here in San Diego, we're in North Park of San Diego, North County, San Diego. And about an hour and 10 north is Orange County.
Yeah.
And then about another 45 minutes here in LA. Orange County is where I grew up, which is a little town called Stanton, California, which is right next to Anaheim, which is where Disneyland is, and Winter Park, which is where Knott's Berry Farm is. So it's right there.
I knew you many years ago, and I still know you, but I knew you from Redeemer Presbyterian Church in New York City. Well, what year did you start going there?
92.
And what year did you all move back to California?
December 30th, 1999.
So you were there, you were at Redeemer 7 years?
Yeah, 7 years.
And you have a lovely wife, a lovely children. Who gave you your work ethic? You're a hard worker. I've known you to be that from day one. You're a writer. Where did you get your work ethic from?
Well, it seems as though that you only get your work ethic from those around you, you know, as you grow up and you kind of start to model behavior that you're seeing. And so my dad, both my mom and dad, very hard working people. My dad is incredibly hard working guy, kind of never stopped, you know, not much to relax. I don't think he found any interest in it. I'm not quite that way, but I do find plenty of joy in relaxing, but he didn't. He was just a hard worker. He's the kind of guy who at almost 90 years old, he fixed a fence the other day, a gate, and he went back several times because the bottom of the gate wasn't quite straight. It was a little bit off. And the funny thing about that gate is that nobody ever will see it. It's just him. He had to have it perfectly even at the bottom, and that he still has that with him, you know, and I think that's kind of a cool thing to carry.
Did he get it even?
He got it even by himself. He's just by himself, you know, lying on the ground and, you know, whatever he's doing with the stuff. He's incredible.
And that's part of what keeps him vital, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. He's got a big house. He's all by himself. My mom lives somewhere else. He's all by himself in the big house that we grew up in. And we always ask him, you know, why don't you move to like a condo and just kind of relax a little bit? And he's like, then what would I do? You know, I get to work on my yard and get to do, and it makes me busy and I accomplish stuff. So
it's hard to argue against that, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is.
Where did you get the writing? But you're a writer, correct?
Yep.
Where did you get the writing bug? What is the earliest that you kind of sort of remember, ooh, I'm decent at this?
Well, you know, one time when I was a kid, I was, you know, humorous or whatever. I thought it was funny and people laughed at me from time to time. And so one time I remember some kids said, man, you tell funny stories. And it never occurred to me that my brand of humor, whatever it was I was saying or doing, had anything to do with stories. I thought I was just, you know, being funny. So it just stayed with me for a long time until I ultimately became a writer. And I thought that maybe sort of that imprint was already there about being kind of a stories writer and a person who told funny stories when I was a kid. So it was kind of early on that I got that little glimpse of that. But I did notice that when I was a young guy, whenever there was a time at camp or a thing in church or a thing at school where they were going to do a skit or write or whatever, it always fell to me. Somehow it gravitated to me without even me really realizing it. It always came to me to do. So I was the one who came up with the funny whatever, you know, to do at church or whatever. So it started to kind of gravitate in my head that, hey, I I think I can do this. You know, I can write stuff. So I got a job as a mailroom supervisor at a big agency in Orange County. And then when I didn't know what it was I was going to do, I got a degree in marketing because my dad said, you're getting a degree in marketing. And I didn't want to do it at all, but I got it, 2.3 GPA, 1 point less. I would not have graduated. And so I was working at a advertising agency.
Wait, what college did you go to?
San Diego State.
San Diego State University.
Yeah. So I was in that advertising agency and I got a job as a mailroom supervisor. So on my first day, I went up the hall to take, you know, my mail around, and there was a big ad on the wall. And it was as if the lights went off and a light shone from heaven and a choir, you know, broke out. And, oh, you know, that's what I can do. I can write funny lines like that, you know, because I had that history and that background of being sort of a stories writer. So that is what suddenly ignited in my heart as a thing. I have got to do that.
You applied for that job.
Well, I started taking classes and started creating a portfolio, you know, kind of a fake portfolio to begin to send around to different agencies, and it took a long time to get there, but I was determined, and my first job was in New York City in 1992.
Ooh, wait, 1992?
Yeah.
That year. So
I spent a long time trying to get a job in advertising. It was super hard.
And you were, I'm guessing, I don't know this, you were trying to bless the community somehow, some way, or was this a personal fulfillment type of thing or a mixture?
You know, it was kind of a scramble for direction, really. I mean, honestly, I'd love to be able to sort of assign some sort of altruistic motive for being a writer at that time, but it was just a mad scramble to find something to do.
And
I felt like maybe many people do, with like, I really don't have a strong feeling one way or the other. When I saw that sign or that ad on the wall, I felt like I had something I could do, and I went for it, ultimately getting a job in 92 at Dentsu in New York City.
Gensu?
Dentsu, D-E-N-T-S-U, in a Japanese agency in New York City.
Cool. I asked you this many years ago, and you told me, and I forgot what the answer is, one or two, or just one famous thing that you have written or done that someone might recognize. Do you ever answer that question? Or do you pass it away and say, yeah, how about that weather, boys? I love that weather.
There was a series of ads back when I was at Gray Advertising. This is in the late 90s. That was Preparation H, where there are people who are sitting on different surfaces, you know, a guy in baseball and a guy on a jury, you know, a guy in a dugout and a guy on a jury pool, and they're all squirming around.
And they were all fidgety. They were all fidgety.
That was
that was fidgety Dave Franco.
All right.
That was fidgety Dave. Why did you change from – you're not still in advertising, are you?
Well, just peripherally. I mean, every now and then there I do get an assignment from somebody, and I did a campaign for a company just recently and that kind of thing. So I'm still involved.
What is the crunch? What is the majority of your projects nowadays?
Well, the majority of my projects is I either write someone's book or I write a legacy book. And if you'd like me to go back and tell you how that left turn kind of happened from advertising to where I am now.
Sure. Yes.
I had been asked to be the marketing writer of a gigantic church here in San Diego. The church is called The Rock Church, and it's just massive. It's like 22,000 people on a Sunday, and it's a full marketing thing. And so I was asked to do that, and I took the job doing that, and I was there for a couple months. And then the supervisor asked me, he goes, hey, Franco, do you write stories? I was like, yes, I do write stories. He said, because we have this woman at the church who's got this incredible story. We'd love to expose it to everybody so they can see how God moved in her life.
You ghost wrote it.
So I wrote it. Well, I didn't write it in her voice. I wrote it in third person, but I have since written many stories in first first person, yeah, as if I'm telling, I've got ghostwriting in that case, you know. So I wrote the story and it hit. Like we put it, posted on the website, and it just got tons of people coming to read that story from all around the world. And so they called me and said, you know, we've been trying to get people to come to our website for a long time and we can't find a way. And if this is how we can get people to our website, just write stories and we'll get someone else to do what it is you do. And I was like, totally. I definitely want to do that. So I switched just kind of like that from a guy who wrote ads and wrote marketing copy to somebody who wrote stories. And it just was a crazy time of success. You know, a lot of times in advertising, you're kind of riding the wave of jobs and assignments that you don't like and things that you can't do well, some good and some bad. But suddenly there was this moment when I was turned my attention toward becoming a stories writer. And it was the most successful thing that I ever done. And it was fun.
It sounds like a very good formula. Has it spread to any other churches that you know of?
Churches have contacted me and I've written stories here and there. I wrote for 5 years stories for the Rock Church, and then they let us, the whole department, all the creatives, 22 of us at one time, they let us all go. Then they called me back, and I've been writing stories for them for another 3 or 4 years. And then with the whole COVID thing, everything shut down. And so I haven't worked for them for however many months now, 4 or 5 months. And then I've written articles for Christianity Today and Risen and Outreach Magazine and so, those kinds of things, where I now have a column in Outreach Magazine, write people's stories there.
You are eclectic in your writing. In other words, you have various projects, do you see a theme, an overarching theme that how you bless the community, how you hope to?
Well, stories.
Stories. Storytelling. Yeah.
Storytelling is a blessing. We lock on to a story like no other. You know, it's like we are perfectly made. Our brains are perfectly wired to receive a story.
Jesus was pretty good at that. Jesus.
Yes.
He was good.
You know, the whole story of when he casts the demons out of the guy who comes out of the cemetery, or you know, the death columns out there, and when Jesus leaves, the guy says, you know, all healed and better now and of mind, says, I want to go with you. And Jesus says, no, stay and just tell your story here. You know, just do that, as if the story of what God has done in your life is all the evangelism that needs to occur. I don't have to be here and establish a beachhead. Just tell your story, you know? And I think about that it's just so powerful that you tell your story and that is witness enough, well, you know?
Dave, we're almost up out of time. What is the hardest part of your work?
Besides getting the work, which can be a difficult thing, the hardest part of my work, you know, the hardest part of my work is actually attaching a price.
This interview is the hardest part of your work, isn't it? Yeah.
Is attaching a price to what it is I do, because you had mentioned it earlier in our conversation, you know, whether it's a self-esteem thing or whatever, I never feel like I'm actually worthy of what people give me. And sometimes it's very expensive, you know, and I deal with a lot of guilt for that. But the hardest part for me is really attaching a price commensurate with what they're being given. I carry a lot of guilt when I'm collecting. It's a strange thing. I wish I could kind of cut that away. People seem to be happy enough to get it. You know, they're not giving me a bad time about it, but that is a hard part of work. But if you want to know, I feel very wired for telling stories, and the cool thing about being a storyteller, at least what it is I do, is how really comfortable I am doing it.
I want you to send me one or two, just one of your legacy stories.
I can send you a small little version of one. That's good.
I look forward. I'm a tiny bit of a storyteller, but you are the invaluable storyteller. Thank you for telling so many great stories over the years. Even the preparation H, you are telling a story there. You're telling a story. And unless you can tell a story, unless you can get the point across narratively, you're not getting the point across. You're not communicating well. Thank you for serving the community. Southern California, America, the different pockets, wherever your work is seen. Thank you so much for your family, your neighborliness back in the day. Thank you for being on Labors for Neighbors. That's one of your labors, by the way. Labors for Neighbors.
I like that.
All right, Dave. Good seeing you.
You too, Joe. I'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye.